Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the May 6, 2024 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Management Committee. This meeting is also being provided telephonically for additional access by the public. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this in-person and telephonic meeting.
Good afternoon. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Good afternoon. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel of RI Housing, speaking. Members of the public can visit the RI Housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions being taken. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted, we will stop until audio can be restored. Chairman Stephen Pryor will preside at this afternoon's meeting. Commissioners and staff, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time for those listening in by teleconference. And now I will turn it over to the chairman to please call the meeting to order. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am calling the meeting to order. It is 3:08 p.m., and I'm going to start by asking Carol to conduct the roll call, if you would, Carol.
Certainly. Commissioner-designee Cabral.
Here.
Commissioner-designee Craven.
Here.
Commissioner Womer.
Here.
Commissioner Pryor.
Here.
Chairman.
Thank you. I'm going to introduce committee item one, which is just the approval of the minutes. This is from March 11th. Would you take a quick glance, make sure you think it works, and then when you're ready, I'll entertain a motion for approval. Is there a motion?
So moved, Johnson Homer.
Second, Rob Craven.
Moved and seconded. Any edits? Any discussion? Hearing none, Corey, would you please conduct the voice vote?
Happy to. All those in favor of approving the minutes of the Management Committee meeting held on March 11th, 2024, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have 4 affirmative votes and the motion is approved.
All right.
Thanks.
Anything there? Great. All right, we're into the action item number 2, recommendation for approval of engagement with consultant for 2024, continuum of care program competition. And I'm going to ask Elizabeth to go ahead and present this item, if you would, Elizabeth.
Thank you. This is Elizabeth Bioto. This request for action is to engage Housing Innovation LLC to develop a solution for the 2024 continuum of care competition. Rhode Island Housing serves as the collaborative applicant on behalf of the Rhode Island Continuum of Care. COC, the HUD releases funding for COC opportunities once annually, and that is our opportunity here in Rhode Island for the COC to renew our continuum of care and youth homelessness demonstration project funding. We anticipate also that HUD will announce what they call a supplemental funding opportunity for COC funding at some point to be determined throughout the year. And this firm would be prepared to support us as the collaborative applicant in responding to that COC and YHDP funding opportunity when HUD announces the funding. If approved, Housing Innovations would commence work in late May or June of 2024 and complete the relevant scopes of work to help us submit the COC's application at least 2 business days before HUD's opportunity closes. At this point, HUD has not yet announced the precise dates for COC funding, so we'd like to contract for this support in advance so that we're ready as soon as the notice of funding is posted. We issued a request for proposals on February 28, 2024. The RFP was posted on our website, Division of Purchasing, social media. In response, we did receive 1 proposal from Housing Innovations. We convened a committee consisting of executive division staff to review the proposal. and are unanimously recommending approval of the Firm Housing Innovations for a 12-month contract for a total not to exceed $28,000. I'm happy to answer any additional questions you might have.
Questions? Kick us off with one. It's a pretty rudimentary one, if you don't mind, Elizabeth. With whom are we competing in this competition when we apply?
So Rhode Island Housing submits the application on behalf of the Continuum of Care,
yes.
And we are competing with all other continuums of care across the country. I believe there are just over 300.
Got
to
it.
Get you the exact number.
Do you have an order of magnitude guess at how many awards they make out of the 300-ish?
I don't have a guess to that, but I think the answer is most. So there are a few different elements to the COC application. There's renewal of existing funding, and then there's a competition for new dollars to bring into the state. We will do both. Usually, as long as the continuum is in good standing with HUD and all the grantees are, you know, in good compliance with their monitorings, et cetera, Rhode Island has been very secure in being able to renew our existing funding, but it is very competitive to bring in the new dollars, and HUD uses a different formula for that, and that's where our homelessness numbers and system performance measures really help make us more competitive or less competitive for the new money coming into the state.
Is there a highest level of funding to seek, highest level aspiration for this application in some way?
There is, yeah. So when HUD issues the competition, they'll issue a matrix that includes the total amount that we can apply for as a state, and we are in the habit of applying for that full amount.
Great.
And part of why engaging this consultant expertise is so helpful is because HUD's process is very technical, and this consulting firm has a lot of experience with Rhode Island in particular and other communities in helping maximize our opportunity to bring in new funding. And we've been quite successful, I think, since 2015 and 2016, we've over doubled the COC funding brought into Rhode Island. So.
Great. Very, very helpful. Any questions?
So I do have a question. So when was the last time that
Last year.
Was it the same consultant firm?
Yes.
I just don't
know. It was.
Okay, it was. Is it always like just the same firm that puts in the bid, or?
We have contracted with this firm since at least 2016 when I joined the agency. I'm not sure about before that, but there have definitely been years that other bids have come in, though. This year we only received the one proposal.
And then another question is, do they do this for other housing agencies in the region?
They do this. This firm contracts with other continuums of care. I'm not aware of any that are also mortgage finance agencies, but certainly other collaborative applicants. So they work with
Connecticut,
other states. Yep, they work with Connecticut. It's a nonprofit organization there that does their collaborative application. And yeah,
is there concern that they're working with another agency there that are competing for the same funding, or is that not?
That's not really a concern of mine. I think HUD is open and transparent about parts of their criteria, and this consulting firm has always been open and transparent about what those are.
It's more of they're helping you do the package
for managing
more
package.
Than they're making you compete against another firm that they're also helping.
Yes.
Anything else, anybody? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion, Robert Craven.
Is there a second?
Second, Jonathan Womer.
Made and seconded. Can I ask if there are any further questions or discussion items? Hearing none, Corey, would you take the voice vote, please?
Of course. All those in favor of recommending approval of the engagement of a consultant for the 2024 Continuum of Care Program competition, namely Housing Innovations LLC. Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. We have a unanimous vote. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Item three, this is upcoming capital improvements for discussion. So I'm going to ask Brett to go ahead and make a presentation, if you would.
Thank you. This is Brett Pelletier. I wanted to keep the or make the management committee aware of two major capital improvement programs that have been ongoing and expect to continue on into the next fiscal year. Here at Brown Housing, the first is in the Earl Building, which is the building I saw, which is an electrification of the HVAC system, transitioning from the original gas-fired hot air furnaces to an all-electric heat pump system. The existing units have exceeded their useful life and are now becoming problematic for replacement parts, and one of the major components of the system is no longer made, and the old stock units have been depleted, so effectively if one breaks, it'll break in the middle of winter. So we decided before I got here to look into all electric heat pump systems, and that's the system that we've settled on, and the engineers and architects have been working very closely together a set of specs and strategy for getting the new unit in a very, very old building. We budgeted $1.5 million for the conversion. Estimated to take about three or four weeks per floor. Four floors were hoping to be done within 4 to 5 months, top to bottom. Happy to answer any questions you have on that one before I get to the second one.
Questions?
The hope is we'll get to start very quickly in the summertime. Bids will go out very soon. The bid spec will go out very soon. So, as complicated as it is, we understand it will be a relatively straightforward process for an HVAC contractor. The second is roof repairs to the Slade and Gar building. We have experienced over the last year or so leaking when it rained heavily in an area of the roof. I don't know how else to describe it except it's basically a one-story covered courtyard in the interior of the building. Sort of see it if you're in a conference room on the third floor, if you look down to. It holds a lot of mechanical equipment and is the sort of central quarter between courtyard between the surrounding building ground block. It had been replaced 3 or 4 years ago with the rest of the roof, but has failed, and we've been getting water penetration in, which we have been studying as long as I've been here, which is 5 months. And we've had engineers and architects and everybody else trying to figure out where the water's coming from. It's a bit of a mystery. So the strategy is to remove the existing cap. We put a cap on the roof. The last time we did it, go down to the original deck, remove that, and start from fresh, some flashing, some water sealing on the again, similar time frame. 5 to 6 months, give or take, we budgeted $650,000 for that. However, a portion of that is the roof project, and a portion of that is sort of a placeholder for any masonry waterproofing that has to be done. The hope is that when we remove the roof in its entirety, which includes craning off all of the HVAC equipment, we will discover the failure, but so far, externally at least, there is no apparent penetration. So, it has been sort of the bane of facility's existence the last 6 or 8 months, trying to figure out where this water is coming from. And the root needs to be replaced. It's saturated between the layers. So, again, $650 for the total budget. We think the first phase of the roofing can be done this summer into the roofing hole.
Brett, did I miss a comment about OER when you were talking about the work that we're doing next door? Aren't we investigating whether or not OER could provide some resources?
But I don't have firm numbers. I spoke to the folks at the Office of Energy Resources this morning. They're putting together a proposal to offset some of the capital costs on the HVAC that we're going to an electrification program. So, and there are some rebates through National Grid or rather Rhode Island Energy. They're relatively minor for organizations like ours. Maybe sort of nickel helps. I think we'll get considerable review process from OER.
Thank you.
That's great.
Any
questions? Thank you for doing all that work.
Sorry.
Thank you for doing all that work.
Oh, this guy at the facilities department on the end.
We're grateful. 3B is a discussion of the Iowa Walker program. And
that's right. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is Corey Meyer speaking. We, and by we I mean my colleagues Leslie McKnight, Carol, and Kara, wanted to introduce you to a topic that we expect you'll be hearing a bit more about in the coming months, involving our Madeline Walker program, which is a foreclosure prevention initiative, and some rulemaking that we expect to undertake. So you may know from reading the paper or from otherwise that last term the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a pretty important decision that held in the context of a tax foreclosure, a government's retention of the full value of a property constitutes an illegal taking unless there is a meaningful opportunity for the homeowner to make a claim on the surplus. This case arose in Hennepin County, Minnesota, where tax liens work a bit differently than they do in Rhode Island. Importantly, in that jurisdiction, the county directly seized and sold a property, that is Mrs. Tyler's condo, to satisfy her tax delinquency. Now, in Rhode Island, there's a reverse auction process where investors purchase fractional interests. They bid down their interest in the tax title as low as 1%, and they hold that subject to the owner's right of redemption. But if it's an owner-occupied property, RI Housing has an owner-occupied single-family property. RI Housing has the right under state law to purchase that lien preferentially to try to prevent a foreclosure. So the taxing jurisdiction gets only the amount outstanding on the tax bill from Rhode Island Housing. Rhode Island Housing receives 100% interest in the property subject to the owner's right of redemption. This is the program that we call the Madeline Walker program. It's been operating since 2008. We typically receive a list of properties that are expected to go to tax sale. We do our best to determine owner occupancy. And then we make payment to the city or town to have the property removed from the public sale list. Then the hard work begins. Over 5 years, Leslie and her team work with the homeowner through a pretty significant range of outreach methods to facilitate the property owner's redemption of the property. And it is successful most of the time. We can and do pay all the intervening taxes during that five-year holding period, which can be considerable. And that gives the owner even more time to resolve their challenges and redeem the property. When it's not possible to help after that five-year holding period, we bring an action in court to close the redemption period and have title transferred to Rhode Island Housing. At that point, we hire a broker, sell the property. Often we give CDCs a first look so that that property can get put back into use for affordable housing purposes. The proceeds from these sales, when there have been any, have been folded back into the program to support the program's continued operations. You may know from previous budget cycles, we do not receive any support for this program from the state or any other source of revenue. Following the Hennepin decision, there's been litigation all over the country, including in Rhode Island, about various local tax sale procedures. So we decided that it would be prudent to take a really careful look at our practices and our budget and try to figure out, one, how to keep our program on the right side of the line, and two, how to honor the spirit of that Hennepin decision in terms of preserving homeowners' equity. One thing we've already done, in the last few years, we've limited our tax lien purchases to properties where the homeowner has expressed a willingness up front to engage with Rhode Island Housing. And we're hoping that this leads to more redemptions overall and that the program can be more targeted to families who are kind of poised to work with us. But to make that work economically, we are very mindful of our need to fund the program a bit differently. Generally speaking, we have not been charging all the interest that we're entitled to charge under the law. So we think that if we are expecting to receive more claims for surplus, it might be prudent to adjust for the interest charged upfront. So that's one programmatic change that we wanted to make you aware of that is in our proposed regulation that you'll be hearing more about. Also in the proposed regulation, we would be formalizing a claim procedure so that it would be much more straightforward for a homeowner to obtain any surplus proceeds after a sale. We would have standard forms, we would have contact information right on our website, how to make a claim, what steps the homeowner needs to undertake to validate their identity, their interest in the property, and so forth. We are working closely with an outside law firm, Hinshaw and Culbertson. They are a national firm with a specific mortgage servicing and tax lien practice, but they have an office right here in Providence. They've been great partners giving us advice and keeping an eye on the litigation nationwide so that we understand how things are evolving, and they're evolving all the time after this important Supreme Court precedent last year. I've alluded to this upcoming regulatory action. What we are anticipating doing is convening an advisory committee that the Madeline Walker statute has established. This advisory committee is a board made up of representatives from some local interest groups, and we would solicit their feedback on this form of rulemaking that proposes these changes. We would expect then to bring, with the benefit of their feedback, a proposed rule back to the management committee and the full board in a couple months, which would start the process of public comment. So really, we're just now at the start of the process, but we wanted to share with you our thinking on the topic and let you know that you're likely to be hearing more about it. I'm sure that you may have some questions either about the Supreme Court precedent or on the program itself. I'm sure Leslie knows all of this information off the top of her head. I just want to be mindful, since I'm aware that there's litigation kind of fast and furious throughout the country. We may want to pause any very detailed legal discussion until we have an opportunity to talk in executive session, if that's your choice. But happy to entertain your questions. I think most of what I said is covered in this handy PowerPoint. But let me know what questions this raises for you, and we can talk through.
If I could just ask, and I think Corey and Leslie would both agree, this program has been extremely helpful for many, many Rhode Islanders that would otherwise lose their homes. So as an intervening organization, the team and servicing has done an exceptional job working with owners of property. As Corey mentioned, we changed our process a little bit, adding that step where we require the homeowner to connect with us so that we're not just arbitrarily buying liens. We're really, from the start, we're engaging with the homeowner in the property. So it's a very, very good program.
Questions?
Corey, so the goal is to draft the regulation to, in light of the Supreme Court precedent?
I think...
Or just in response to it, just to clarify what policy procedures?
Yeah, so I think the Supreme Court decision gave us the, was the basis for our kind of coming back together, thinking really hard about this program. But if we're going to formalize kind of a set of policies and procedures, it seems only right under the state APA that we reduce it to a regulation, which we have not done before.
And how confident are we in our ability to craft the regulation that's responsive in this changing legal landscape?
Mm-hmm. I think, do you mean...
if we put something down in through regulation and then a subsequent decision, be it from Rhode Island, elsewhere,
yep,
muddies the practice that we put into regulation.
Yeah, that could happen. But I think that we can only work with the information that we have. And the goal here is really to make clear that, you know, as an organization kind of committed to helping keep people in their homes, that we're striking the right balance here and keeping an operational program, a program that can really, on a targeted basis, reach out and help these folks, and also provides a meaningful opportunity for homeowners to recoup their equity at the end of a foreclosure process if that happens. And luckily, in our experience, that's not the most of the time outcome. I think this is all moving in the right direction, which is to clarify that homeowners have rights here. So I think it's an important step.
Great. Thanks.
So did I hear you right that there isn't currently a regulation or a set of regulations on the book for this program?
That's right. We don't currently have a regulation. We have policies and procedures which have kind of grown organically as the program has unfolded since 2008. There are a number of historical reasons for that, one of which is this Madeline Walker Advisory Committee established by statute has been difficult for us to convene over time. Some of the organizations initially listed among the representatives are no longer in existence. A statutory change was necessary to come up with replacement organizations. There's no mechanism in the statute for a chair of that board or a process. So there have been some challenges to that process, but we're willing to kind of muscle it through now because we think it's really important.
And I assume the regulatory, you'd be sort of using just a broad Rhode Island housing regulatory authority for this. There is authority to issue regulation.
There is specific authority in the Madeline Walker statute, I believe.
Oh, to issue regulations.
Yes.
You just haven't been. I got it.
Yes.
We'll just pause there for a moment. Would you all prefer executive session to go into greater depth on that? I've heard you allude to that, Corey. Is this territory where you'd like to have that conversation?
No, I'll let you know I'd prefer that you might want to consider comments
Perfect.
Offline.
Excellent.
Thank you, though.
You were saying something else.
Yes.
I guess one thing under the APA that I'd flag here is the requirement for a cost-benefit analysis.
Yep.
And given the legal action spanning the country, that's one way to attack a rule, and this would seem like numbers moving around a lot. So would we expect to see a draft cost-benefit analysis with the regulations that comes to the board?
That's a good question. Typically, we are requested to provide that to the OMB folks prior to the first appearance at the board. So it will be part of the packet, but it will have already been sent to ORR.
Okay.
They like the first crack at it, as I'm sure you well know.
I just find it a lot easier to understand a rule when I see it as a cost-benefit analysis.
Yep.
Other questions? I'm wondering how it's going in Socket. Is that something we can get into?
Yes, although I'll have to defer to Leslie and Carol, who may have more information on that.
Great.
I don't know that anything has significantly changed. Right. Although we have had discussions with John Pagliarini, and have we had dialogue with the council president, the new council president?
Some comments about your proposed changes.
Yeah.
That's right. That rings a bell. They have shared some draft ordinance language with us, which we have commented on.
So since then, no.
Okay. Just to volunteer, if it's helpful to intersect with and communicate with the mayor in any way, shape, or form as that evolves, please let me know. I found him to be thus far, receptive to variety of subjects.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, very good to work with.
Yeah, totally agree. Okay. Anything else from anybody? Ms. Myers, you don't require any action by the board on that.
No. This was just to let you know that this was much on our minds, and we were expecting to come back to you within the next couple of months with a more concrete plan of action.
Very good. Thank you for that report. Carol, I think you were done with the business matters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great. So there is no further business, and I would like to motion to adjourn. Is there a motion?
I move Josh Moore.
Is there a second?
Second.
Well. Second is Corey. Would you take the voice vote?
Mm-hmm. All those in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. The four affirmative votes. And with that, the meeting.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Enjoy this.